Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. It is late here on the East Coast. We were hoping not to start this late, but here we are an hour after we were hoping to start. We are back today to talk about the latest Survivor 30 happenings, as well as talk a little bit about the big news about Survivor 31. So, Dom, before we get into everything today, I do want to let the people know that we just posted a link to all of the information that we have and all the podcasts we've done about season 31, you know, our interviews with some of the candidates, other podcasts we've done with those people. And also, we did do a podcast last week. I'm sure plenty of people out there missed it, because as happens from time to time, iTunes did not seem to like this episode. So if you missed that episode and you want to go back and hear what we had to say about last week, you can do domandcolin.com.
Yeah, although most of that episode was thinking about all of the theoretical possibilities for something that never actually transpired, and for what was, in actual fact, a fairly boring episode, which means most of today is not going to be taken up by that. It's mainly going to be given over to the Season 31 stuff, which seems kind of fitting, because for most of Wednesday, all of this hype was building up over Season 31, and the episode itself was kind of an afterthought, and you know, it wasn't helped by the fact that it was fairly boring, but I think that was always going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, 30 is over at this point. It's been over, I would say, for a little while now. But certainly everyone's attention has focused squarely on season 31. As Dom mentioned, we're going to be talking all about that as we get to the end of this podcast. But I think we at least have some things that we should mention, at least for the record, for season 30 of this latest episode that we just watched. But I think for today, certainly, this is going to be, as it pertains to the newer episode, one of the more brief episodes we've ever really done as far as commentary is concerned. And Dom, if you are happy, let's just get right into it. And let's get into the fallout at camp after the last tribal council. Of course, we lost Shireen. Before we get into the fallout, I know we talked about setting this up last week. Let's give some parting thoughts on Shireen here.
Okay, well, I'll let you start, because I think we are broadly on the same page, but I think you're a bit more extreme, or at least a bit more outspoken about it than I would be.
Yeah, you know, Shireen, obviously one of the more popular people here this season with Twitter and Reddit, and don't get me wrong at all, I certainly like Shireen, and I am fully anticipating seeing her back next season. That being said, I'm certainly not as into Shireen as most people seem to be, to the point that it is almost baffling to me how into Shireen some people are.
Yeah, Shireen is RC, if RC actually went through anything difficult. Like, I know RC famously compared her survivor experience to the Holocaust, which seems a little bit extreme, I'm not going to lie. And Shireen's experience, not quite that bad, but she actually did go through some seriously rough stuff out there. The question is, and especially now that she's in consideration for season 31, is that going to define the whole survivor experience for her? And if she does come back, is she going to be able to not put that aside, because that's always going to be a part of it, but can she almost look at it as a new chance to play the game, if you like?
I think she will certainly be looking at it as a new chance to play the game. That being said, I'm not so sure how well that's going to go for her. I think even people like Jen and Haley, who were, at least for a certain time, voting with her, prior to the point that they needed her, were constantly giving confessionals that Shireen is annoying, basically. And I see that very much being a problem for Shireen down the line. And I'm not saying that Shireen is, I don't know. I don't question that Shireen is very smart and very well-intentioned and a very big fan of the game. I just don't know how well her actual personality and kind of skill set is ever going to really translate into success on Survivor.
Yeah, and we saw Jen and Haley resume that same kind of criticism the moment that they were in Ponderosa together. And in this most recent Ponderosa video, it was supposed to be Tyler's Ponderosa video, but Shireen made it about herself, and she was berating him as soon as he arrived, saying that he, you know, was partly responsible for what went on out there, and that she had a lot of stuff that she could teach him if only he was willing to listen. And I worry that she's not going to accept the fact, however difficult it may be, that yes, Dan and Will are just completely off the reservation as far as that's concerned, but that also people did find her annoying, and that going into a new season with a new cast, if she doesn't reflect on that to some degree, then that's just going to be true again. And you look at her her campaign video, there's a lot of enthusiasm there, and that's great to see, but I think it very quickly crosses a line into being overly enthusiastic and annoying.
Right. I very much love that Shireen is a massive fan of Survivor. I love how much enthusiasm she has for the game. That being said, Carolyn 100% of the time on season 31 over Shireen. More on that later, I suppose. So let's get into the... listen, again, this is not the last we're realistically going to see of Shireen. So I'm sure, you know, however many months from now, we're going to be saying exactly the same thing whenever she invariably gets voted out of season 31. So fallout at camp here after the last tribal council. Of course, Mike went in there with this and the idol, and now he's back here with just the idol. He's got to be feeling good knowing that it's 6-1 and he has ostensibly no way of getting voted out here. If I'm Mike, as we're returning from this tribal council, I really don't feel like I'm not going to be inhibited as far as what I'm willing to say to other people. I feel like creating a spectacle is probably going to be a good idea here where, you know, just playing it kind of fast and loose about making the others just as paranoid as possible. So for this round that I can ideally be able to sit on my idol at the end of the day here, or, you know, at the end of 3 days from now here. So I don't know. I guess we'll get into more of Mike and his whole approach this round as we talk through it. Just getting into this, he justifies this to Dan the night after where he said, you know, I knew everyone was writing Tyler down, so I wanted to split it, which to me is, you know, at least if I'm in Dan's shoes, is saying, yeah, I wanted to split it so you would leave instead of Tyler. Otherwise, I wouldn't have split it, right? But Dan somehow takes this as an apology.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is Will being part of some plan that was previously agreed and then he's just not justifying himself very well to Dan, or if there's just some weird stuff going on in Will's head and he actually has no idea, firstly, what he was doing and secondly, how to explain it to anyone. So maybe in his head, he thinks this is an explanation that Dan is actually going to buy and be happy with. And you would think there's no way that would actually be true, but Dan surprisingly seems to go along with it.
I was really surprised that Will actually voted for Dan or voted for someone other than Shireen. Like, do you have any theories about what inspired this?
Well, we said last week that maybe Tyler and Will were closer than we were seeing, or that there was some agreement within that alliance to split it in such a way that Dan would receive some votes and just to cover against that scenario. But yeah, we didn't get any further elaboration on that, and there's no clue as to what Will's part in it was specifically. So that's still a mystery to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a mystery. It's just Will doesn't really know what he's doing in the game of Survivor.
Yeah, and when we see Dan say all this stuff about, oh, it's okay, I understand, and we're still, you know, four square behind getting Mike out, I assume this was just a standard, like, boilerplate stuff you say to make people think you're still with them, and that we were going to get some Dan confession about, oh, I know exactly what they were up to and I'm going to take them all down or something, you know, similarly hubristic. But he did actually seem to mean it. Like, after that point, we didn't see any infighting within that group if it did continue to occur.
Right, and I feel like this is kind of a point in almost our favor where I'm always an advocate for having people out there who are actively thinking and playing to get first place. And Dan's reaction to, you know, the way the last vote went down. I know Dan is a monstrous super fan of the show and travel however many thousands of miles just to be seen by the casting people. It seems to me like Dan, and this is not going to be a hot take of any sort, Dan has absolutely no idea what he's doing out there. And I can't imagine how Dan, having seen 29 seasons of Survivor, or maybe 28 by the time they were out there filming, of Survivor, can come back from this tribal council and think that everything's cool. All right, so I guess we'll put that on the back burner for now. We'll get into Mike and how he can kind of exploit this scenario as we move ahead. Let's get into just the reward challenge here. And it is very much worth noting, Dom, that it is Rodney's birthday. Are you willing to just show up?
I am indeed. And Rodney is one of those people who seem to think that it being his birthday means he's entitled to do whatever he wants and get away with it. And everyone has to suddenly suspend all the normal rules of play and all work in his favor.
Yeah, one of my podcasting icons. Legitimately, I would never have begun this podcast were it not for Scott Huff, partner of Joe Stapleton, the guy who coined Story Checks Out. Scott Huff has a great quote that no one cares about your pets but you. Similarly with birthdays, I feel. No one gives a fuck if it's your birthday other than you. But Rodney does apparently not feel the same way. And I believe I had this, by the way, albeit off air, that after the quote in last week's episode, that when I was rewatching stood out to me is Rodney saying, oh, you know, next week it's my birthday, so I'm either going to win the reward or someone's definitely going to take me. That seemed a lot that Rodney would not be winning and would not be getting taken, and that is apparently what we saw come into play.
Yeah, that was a good call on your part, so treasure that memory because you don't know when that's going to happen again. Yeah, I saw someone make a good comment that Rodney's one of those people whose mother is still like throwing him a birthday party at the age of 25. You know, Rodney seemed to think it's some great occasion, but yeah, Rodney is seemingly always looking for some excuse to spout off about how miserable his situation is. And if it wasn't this, it would be something else. And you know, there were plenty of people both, you know, on the season and throughout the broad sweep of Survivor who don't get to go on rewards or who don't get to eat as much as other people, and that sucks and that's unfortunate, but he's not special, and you know, he's not the victim in the situation, and he's not someone that we can feel sorry for.
No, certainly not. And this reward challenge, I mean, it's one of the hundreds of reward challenges that we've seen that will just blend together. Rodney's team ends up losing here. And at the end of the challenge, Jeff Probst gives him a chance to basically plead for someone to give him their spot on this reward, which, for the record, is the go and be a Survivor Ambassador reward. I don't know how much we're going to get into the actual happenings because it was the same thing we've seen since Survivor Africa. But I'm thinking in Mike's spot here, you know, it's Mike, Carolyn, and Sierra who win this reward. If I'm Mike, I'm eating as much protein as possible because I know I need to run the table. Is there any merit in your mind if you're Carolyn or Sierra when Rodney's making this plea? Is any part of you thinking, oh, maybe I should give this up?
Well, I thought where you were going with that is there any merit to throwing the challenge so that Mike doesn't get to go and doesn't get to get that food in his belly? And I think there is, actually. Obviously, Carolyn is never going to do that, and I don't think Sierra would either, mainly because they just want to go on the reward and see all the kids and all of that boring stuff. But yeah, I think if you're purely looking at it from that perspective, then it's a smart thing to do.
Well, I would question, on this round where Mike has... No, actually, you're totally right. And of course, I'm always the advocate for throwing challenges in certain scenarios. If you can throw this challenge, keep Mike from eating, hopefully he loses the next immunity challenge and then has to use that idol. Because, of course, if he goes on to win the next immunity challenge, he would have the idol still in his pocket entering Final Six. I think that's actually a great point that I can't believe I didn't consider prior to definitely be throwing this challenge almost.
Yeah, although one way it wouldn't be smart is it invites the PR disaster of having Dan and Rodney be your goodwill ambassadors to a bunch of children. I'm not sure the children would take very kindly to that, but I guess we'll never know.
Well, let's go back to the original question then. If you're Carolyn or Sierra, are you considering giving this up to Rodney?
I guess. I don't know. I feel like if you have promised that you yourself will give it out to him, then maybe you have to, but when it's three of you winning, I don't think he can reasonably expect any one of you to just fall on your sword for him.
Well, he can't reasonably expect it, but he can certainly irrationally expect it, which is apparently what we saw come in, you know?
Sure, but I don't know if he's going to be like, oh, Carolyn is such a bitch for not giving me her reward, as opposed to, no one gave me their reward, woe is me, life is misery, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I guess for me, if I felt like I did not have a good shot at Rodney's jury vote and I thought that this would sway him, I would definitely be willing to give it up, but short of that, no, I'm going to go eat. Yeah, okay, so Rodney, as a result of not getting to go on this reward, comes up with this kind of Ozzyon Savai-esque ruse to pretend that he is just done with the game, he's pissed at everyone, please vote me out, because if you don't vote me out, I'm going to make your life a living hell. And this is all just, of course, to try to get Mike to sit on his idol, which Mike, of course, sees right through. And if I'm Mike right here, I feel like this reward challenge actually gave Mike a couple of good angles. Not only the last tribal council, but this reward challenge specifically where, first of all, he can say, hey, Rodney, neither of Carolyn or Sierra was willing to give up their reward for you on your birthday, dude, which I wouldn't give a shit about, but Rodney clearly does, so why not sell it to him that way? And just secondarily, in general, after all the way things went down after the last tribal council and this reward with Rodney not being happy, this is exactly what I'm looking for here if I'm Mike, where I'm trying to just drive as many wedges as possible into this group of six. And at least based on the episode and based on what we can very reasonably presume to be a winner edit, it seems like Mike did not even take any of this into consideration. Like, it seems like he wasn't even working towards dividing this group. I, you know, he had a couple of lines about it, but it seems like nothing actually demonstrated.
Well, I think when you see through that ruse that Rodney's going with, then it's clear that that's not really an angle that's going to work. Because if Rodney is trying to harness that to make you think that, you know, to make you think that you're safe, and you instantly call him out on it, then there's not much point in trying to turn that back on him and pretend that it's real.
Well, why can't you turn it back and say, listen, idiots, this ruse is not... No, don't say, listen, idiots, first of all, ever in Survivor. But in my mind, I would be saying, listen, idiots, this ruse is never going to work. I'm going to play my idol. You guys have to figure out who's going to leave, and I'm just going to be here chilling, basically. And I just want them trying to scheme as often as possible. That's my only goal here, if I'm Mike in this round, is getting people to second-guess each other.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was a lot of that going on, but given that it was ultimately not fruitful, we didn't see as much of it as maybe we should. I guess the larger question is, we were talking last week about all of these things that Mike could maybe do and the amount of freedom that his position gives him, and yet it seems like the final outcome was fairly straightforward. You know, the group decided that Tyler was the biggest threat within their number, and so he was the one to go. I wonder if Mike expected them to turn on Tyler, and if he was really okay with that, because you reach a point where if everyone else in that alliance is on board with what you want to do, maybe it's not what you want to do anymore. And maybe as soon as the vote seems like it's going to be on Tyler, maybe you want to try and flip it and put it on Dan or Rodney or somebody else.
Right. I guess I think that is a good point that, hey, if Mike recognizes that if I play my idol, Tyler is going to be the one who goes and I'm cool with that. So maybe I should just let Tyler go. But I feel like, if I'm in Mike's position, I'm not looking for a one-round pass and then hopefully be able to run the table and immunity challenges. I'm looking for establishing some kind of long-term conflict.
Yeah, I think there are two dimensions there. The first is, if you think you might have to run the table and Tyler is the biggest threat to you doing that, then maybe it makes sense to just let him go. But if the argument is Tyler's one in control of that group, and then everyone does seem willing to vote him out, then he isn't actually in control as you thought, and so therefore maybe that rationale changes.
There's also the idea, of course, we're always advocates for, if you're Mike, leaving Tyler in as kind of a buffer that you could at least plausibly sell as, listen, I'm obviously going to be the biggest threat from now until the end of the game. We got Tyler's going to just waltz to victory for as long as you keep me, you know, for as long as he stays here. The threat, you know, the spotlight's never going to be on him, whereas it's always going to be on me.
Yeah, I don't think that would actually work, but Mike could maybe sell that angle to Tyler and say, in a kind of Terry and Arvis vein, look, you know that I'm going to be here for the foreseeable future. For as long as I'm here, you can use your own challenge prowess as an argument to keep yourself in the game as well. So maybe there's some merit to the two of them teaming up, even though they know that it's... Even though they both know that it can only be temporary.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a ton of merit, quite honestly, in Tyler and Mike. I think it's certainly in both of their best interests for the other person to be there through at least Final Five. Because as long as the other person is there, they at least have someone to sell as a bigger threat than themselves. So I guess let's get into this immunity challenge. We're making good time here, I would say, Dom, on this episode. This is once again, holding your body weight up again. And shockingly, Carolyn, who weighs 30 pounds less than the next lightest person, at least, wins this challenge with great ease. Much for our fan fiction about Mike setting a new immunity challenge record with 6 in a row. Although I will say, and this is something I know we've talked about off air, is it seems almost now that Mike doesn't have his idol and still no one seems to be willing to work with him, it seems almost impossible that anything happens other than Mike running the table from this point forward in immunities.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of disappointing to me. Like, if it was the case where he still had his idol and he was winning challenges and just, like, dominating the game on both angles like that, then it would be more fun to watch in a way. But as it is, you know that that's what the outcome has to be. So it's just going to be, okay, Final 6 he wins, Final 5 he wins, Final 4 he wins. And any plans that the majority alliance have in the interim almost don't seem to matter. And so, you know, this alliance, which has been controlling the game for the best part of it now, is like whatever else is going on in there just doesn't amount to anything.
Well,
so their whole side of the narrative just has no reason to exist.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you that I feel like it seems almost inevitable that Mike's about to run the table here. The only reservation I have about that is it seems to me that I wouldn't give this much credit to Jeff Probst, but I would give enough credit to Max Dawson to recognize that a person who was clearly on the outs running the table in immunity challenges to steal a win is not going to be the best season ever. And Max came back saying this is the best season ever. So I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think Jeff would still be on board with calling it that. The one thing that gives me pause is when he was talking about the advantage and plugging it when it was being released that week, he said that it plays out beautifully, or words to that effect. Mm-hmm. And at present, if it's just a case of Mike wins the challenges and nothing else matters, then the extra vote isn't really going to come into play at all. So it makes me wonder if Mike is about to go because he doesn't win, and then he is somehow able to flip Dan over and Dan uses the vote and it just cascades everything from there. Because at that point, if Dan's vote is solely responsible for Mike staying in the game and then going on to win the season, that's good cause for saying it played out beautifully. If you might not like the outcome personally.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I actually, that is a fantastic counterpoint, which is that they did say that this twist, certainly at least, they did say it comes into play like very well. So it's certainly going to come into play at some point. So now I'm actually going to retract what I said a couple of minutes ago. And I actually feel like Mike will lose one here and actually swing Dan somehow.
Yeah, so everything I said about that being the only plausible outcome, Scratch that, reverse it, you know, just pretend it never happened.
Yeah, definitely. So Carolyn here is now immune yet again. Everyone seems down to vote for Mike, which to me is insane. To me, it is, how can I possibly be comfortable with voting for Mike when I can be fairly certain he's about to play this idol tonight? You know what I'm saying? For Tyler in particular, where I can be almost positive that Mike's vote is going to be on me being Tyler, you could not, I mean, you'd have to pay me tens of thousands of dollars at this point in the game to not put my vote on someone other than Mike.
I guess the answer is if he is that confident that the backup vote is Dan, but we never saw the conversation that would give him that confidence, and so it does just look like an outright blunder in that case. But for someone like Tyler who has to know that the situation is coming, where Mike will be immune and Mike will be gunning for Tyler, and that there will be people within his own alliance who recognize that he is a threat, he has to be doing some kind of work to counteract that. We never really got to see how that played out.
Yeah, that must be it, right? That Carolyn did a good enough job of selling him that she and Will would be voting for Dan, so worst case scenario is Dan goes and Mike burns his idol. I don't know. I feel like I would have such a hard time here, even with that in mind, if I'm Tyler, like, to not make sure myself, or to at least not assign myself as one of the people voting for the other person.
Yeah, maybe it's the knowledge that Mike is voting for Tyler that gives everyone else cover and almost inspires them to hold the line and vote for him. But it's so weird to me that in this alliance where you have four or five people, each of whom at some point has either blown up on other people or acted emotionally or displayed these obvious glaring flaws in their own game, for someone like Tyler, who has shown this propensity to just sit back and analyze things and really not get excited and get out of control, for him to just be taken down by like the likes of Dan and Rodney and Will just seems so incongruous with what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent the whole season thinking, or, you know, at least the vast majority of the season, thinking that if I were forced to invest in any one of the season 30 players, it would be Tyler to win a general season. I'm now starting to wonder if it might actually be Carolyn, because I think you do make a good point that it seems like she totally duped him here.
Yeah, and when I say taken down by Dan, Will, and Rodney, I'm not minimizing Carolyn's role in that. I'm excluding her because she is the one person who does seem to have shown some capability for the game. You know, despite the earlier blow-ups with Shireen and maybe seeming to just be acting vindictively at times, she is someone who has this kind of very sharp, vulture-like instinct almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, please God, vote for Carolyn. Like, we're not going to do endorsements or whatever, but please vote for Carolyn. I guess that isn't an endorsement.
Wait, seriously? Why? Seriously?
Seriously, vote for Carolyn?
Yeah.
Of course.
Why?
I would say Carolyn is in my top three people I would want to see most back for season 31.
Wow, that is a that is an interesting opinion, right?
Well,
there.
Because I feel like Mike is going to, at a certain point, start winning immunity challenges and basically steal this from Carolyn, at least potentially. Where I would certainly love to see Carolyn back. Carolyn is exactly the type. I feel like I said this in even like our premiere podcast, the season premiere podcast of season 30, that Carolyn is exactly the type of older woman I want in Survivor.
Well, a lot has happened since then, and almost none of it has involved Carolyn, which is why if you listen to the podcast in weeks like 3 through 8, Carolyn doesn't really get mentioned that much, and it's because she kind of dropped off the radar entirely, and now she's popping up, and it's displaying some skill for the game, but there's been this big gulf in the middle where we haven't really got to see what she's doing.
I mean, more on that later. Let's save that for when we get to season 31. Let's get in now to the ideas, if you're Carolyn here, where you know that Tyler is going to be getting Mike's vote, and you and Will are being delegated to the backup vote person. In the event that Mike plays as idol, we end up seeing Carolyn and Will both putting their votes on Tyler here. Right idea in your mind here? Are you comfortable if you're Carolyn in letting Tyler go here?
Yeah, I think I like it. We were saying last week that it's best for Carolyn if Tyler leaves the game somehow, and if that isn't by her own hand, then maybe that's best. But at this point, she's going to be the one in the middle making that decision, and so she knows eventually she needs to cut Tyler, and this is the best opportunity to do it, I think.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm on board with this for sure. Which is, I feel like in Carolyn's position, she's got to recognize that with the very possible exception of Mike, Tyler is easily the most competent player left in that field, and probably the only one who can beat her if push comes to shove. And Mike is always going to be the target. So yeah, I definitely do. I can definitely get behind this idea here if you're Carolyn.
Yeah. And on top of that, Tyler is the only one who knows about her idol, and her actions this round are going to make it very clear to him if she survives that she's not willing to play, and so he has no reason to maintain that secrecy after this point. So if you want to get Tyler out and keep that in your back pocket, I think you have to go for it now.
Right, yeah, that's actually a great point that I hadn't considered, is he is the only one who knows about Carolyn's idol. Not that secrecy at this point is going to be a huge deal. It's not, I don't feel like it's going to wind up as a situation where the votes are going to be on Carolyn in these next couple of rounds, but her idol saves her. But nonetheless, it certainly is helpful to remove that person.
Right, but if she wants to go for some weird maneuver like Natalie did with Beta last season, then people not knowing about her idol is going to be very fundamental to making that happen.
Yeah, although with that in mind, these people, as dumb as they are, still have to recognize that white-collar idol has never been accounted for. Do you think there's any kind of concern going on?
Yeah, you would wonder, like, if Tyler had it, would he play it here? And I think he almost certainly would, right?
Although, he knows Mike's votes on him, yes, 100%, I think. He plays it here if he knows that Mike's votes are going to be on him.
So if you're Rodney, let's say, are you just assuming that Carolyn has the idol here? Or are you thinking maybe it just wasn't ever found?
Well, that's my question is, I feel like when the other people left in the field are Rodney, Dan, Sierra, and Will, if I'm Carolyn, maybe there's a chance that it never even crosses their mind that the white collar idol is unaccounted for. Like, yeah. I feel like if I'm Mike, that's something I want to be playing up, is there's still an idol out there. You still have other things to be worried about.
Yeah, I think with this group, until they have an active reason to think that she might have an idol, the idea might not even cross their minds. Whereas for Mike and for any player who is thinking about it more actively, they're going to realize that something must have happened to it. Like either Max or Shireen or somebody found it and just got voted out and never use it for some reason, or someone still has it. And I don't think you lose too much by accounting for the possibility that Carolyn has it here. Like it's in some ways better to try and play around it and maybe end up getting yourself into a tough spot than to just not play around it. And then if she does have it, that could be catastrophic potentially.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I also I'm going to be really curious once people start caring about this season again to find out about what Carolyn was doing as far as disguising the fact that she had an idol goes, where if she was actively trying to sell people on, oh, wow, that's weird that Max didn't play it when he was getting voted out or something along those lines. I would be very curious to hear about what people were thinking as far as that white collar idol was concerned. But I think along similar lines for Carolyn, she may have concerns if Tyler goes that other people aren't loyal to her. Like, I think that's the big argument against voting Tyler out, is he clearly seems on board with her. But if I'm Carolyn, I'm hammering home the idea that the older woman, at least recently, never gets votes, right? Like Monica, like Dawn. And I would definitely be hoping to be a Denise instead of a Missy. And I don't think that's unrealistic for her, but that's certainly what I would be pitching.
See, I actually think this makes it easier to deflect suspicion away from her, because if everyone thinks that she is close with Tyler, then being willing to vote out Tyler might be a way to prove her loyalty to the others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if her and Tyler are both still in the game at Final Six or Final Five, even people of, like, Dan or Will's caliber can't escape the idea that maybe the two of them need to be broken up at some point. Whereas this way, there is no one who has an obvious tie to Carolyn. And if they're not looking at her as a threat in her own right, then she could potentially just go completely under the radar here and not have to worry about votes until her idol expires.
Right. No, exactly. If I'm Carolyn and Tyler goes here, all I'm considering is, well, if Tyler goes, are the votes ever realistically coming on me next round? Because I know I'm good at Final Five with this idol. And I think the answer is an overwhelming no. It is very unlikely that the votes are going to come on her at Final Six. So, I'm all on board with this. And I feel like at this point, she's just looking forward to her opportunity to play a challenge for potentially $1 million at Final Four.
Also, we know from Tyler's exit interviews that he has been doing a lot of work telling the others that Carolyn can't have the idol because of various reasons. And so if they actually buy into that and don't think that it's actually because she has the idol and he's covering for her, then they might just think that it's a dead issue at this point.
Right. Yeah, there is certainly you have to take into consideration that Will, Dan, Rodney, Sierra, and Mike on the outs are not necessarily the most thinking of opponents as far as it pertains to, like, what you can generally expect in Survivor. Like, I think she is able to get away with more than she would otherwise be able to here. So Mike ends up idling himself here, and he seems like he was very confident that that idol was going to need to be used, like the majority of the votes were definitely going to be onto him, which to me almost signals that he did a bad job, that he didn't even have to think about it. Like, because I feel like if you're Mike this round, as we've said before, your only priority is creating long-term fractures, and he seemed confident that he had not pulled that off.
Right, and he's put himself in this position now where it seems like he will have to win immunity in this upcoming episode or he just goes home. And, you know, based on the editing and the fact that Mike seems overwhelmingly likely to win the season, we can be pretty sure that that's going to happen, I think. But if it doesn't and he finds some other way to get around that, then good for him, I suppose.
Right. Well, I mean, as we touched on, it is looking likely that if that double vote is going to come into play in a way big enough for Jeff Probst to think that it was a great use of the twist, that maybe that means something good for Mike. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, Mike's goal this round is to do something that means he can't, like, to give himself a path to victory other than winning out the challenges. And when he's playing the idol on himself this confidently, I feel like he did a bad job there. Now, Tyler gets a question here from Jeff Probst where he says, what if it's you tonight? Would you be surprised? And Tyler pauses, like goes into the tank and then says, yes. And as if there was any doubt, that is the end of Tyler's game. Yeah.
That's a tricky one because you always want to be showing your allies that you trust them and that you're confident in what they've been saying to you. But at the same time, you know, as soon as you say that, that if it is you tonight, that is going to be that is guaranteed to make the episode with some weird like sound effect in the background.
Yeah, the classic sting of death, I can't believe didn't play over that, but I guess they think we're onto it. So let's, I suppose, give some parting thoughts on Tyler here. I know I had been talking him up as the best player of the season for quite a while now. I still think in some timelines that Carolyn could definitely overthrow that mantle. But I'll begin. I certainly loved virtually everything I saw out of Tyler here. I thought he was an extremely capable player and exactly the kind of person that I want to see playing on Survivor. And it blows my mind that there are not more Tyler types. I feel like these are exactly the people we want on Survivor.
See, my issue with that is Tyler himself has said he was consciously playing a very passive game. He was sitting in the background trying not to draw attention to himself. And I think that's wise. You know, you have so many big egos this season that you don't want to get caught in the crossfire there. At the same time, what that does mean is his style of play is not something which is going to be featured heavily on the show. And he knows that and he understands that he's going to get a fairly low-key edit. And so when we're talking about how good a player Tyler is, it's a lot of inference, a lot of hypotheticals about what he might be doing behind the scenes. And we're kind of taking it on faith that when the chance does come to exploit those relationships that he's made, that he's going to be able to do that. And it seems like from this episode, he wasn't able to. And so to say confidently that Tyler was the best player, I think is risky.
No, and as I've said, I it would take a five-figure dollar amount for my vote to be on Mike here, like if I'm Tyler. There is no way you could pay me to vote on Mike. So I definitely, like, just the fact that he was willing to do that certainly drastically reduces how good I feel about him as a player in general. At the same time, I think you are right. He is taking the low-key approach because he understands the big personalities they put on Survivor, and he's doing the smart thing. What I want are a bunch of people who are willing to do the smart thing, and they will adjust if there are a lot of other people willing to do the smart thing. All right, so let's look at next time on Survivor. Mike is clearly going to win immunity right here, because even if he does manage to flip Dan, that's still only 3 votes out of 7 at that point. And I just kind of, to make it clear why we feel like it's such an obvious outcome that Mike is going to win, let's think back to how Mike found himself on the outs, which was at the auction. If a person, literally anyone in the history of Survivor, managed to play their way out of a comfortable spot in the majority by making a move at the auction that was at least arguably unethical and certainly easily avoidable, like at best something any good player would avoid, and then went on to lose the game, there is a 0.0000000% chance that they would get the edit that Mike is getting. He would get the complete buffoon edit if he were to do anything but win.
Yeah, and that's the important thing to understand here. You always have to ask that counterfactual question, like, if they wanted to make this person look bad, or if the actual outcome that happens would make that person look bad, then they could very easily buy into that, and yet instead, they're going to such lengths to build up Mike and present him as this, like, heroic figure. And why would they be doing that unless he does complete this comeback?
So let's lock Mike in as the winner. Who are your losing finalists? Because I feel like Dan is certainly a lock at this point, right? How is Dan anything but a losing finalist? How does he ever get voted out?
Yeah, I think you can actually make a case for any of the people left in the game as a losing finalist, aside from Mike, obviously. I think Carolyn of those is maybe the least likely. I could see her getting voted out at... her idol expires at Final 5, right?
Right, Carolyn is... this is exactly what's going to happen, in my view, a huge percentage of the time. Carolyn's fine for the next vote. She idles herself at Final 5. And then at Final 4, she loses final immunity to Mike, and he is able to make a compelling pitch. Not that he would ever consider voting out Dan or whoever the other person is over Carolyn. Like, I feel like you can, almost as surely as you can lock Mike in as the winner, you can, if she doesn't go at Final 6, she will be gone at Final 4. I don't see Carolyn as a losing finalist.
Yeah, I think Carolyn going at Final 4 is maybe the most likely outcome for her at this point. Yeah.
Easily, yeah.
Beyond that, I keep trying to square this statement from Jeff that Dan's second vote ends up playing out beautifully or whatever it was with the fact that I'm not really sure how it would at this stage. Like, maybe he flips at Final 5 and gets to organize something, or maybe one outcome could be if they all target Dan at Final 6 after Mike wins immunity, and Dan knows that, ends up flipping to Mike, or... I don't know, that's so tricky, though.
Right, it's like, why are they targeting Dan? For me, it seems, if we're looking at this from just a logical people who are editing this season to tell a compelling story, it seems like they have built Rodney up enough and Sierra down enough to make it clear that, first of all, Will and Dan are not getting voted out at Final 6. It seems like it almost has to be Rodney going here at Final 6 after Mike wins immunity. Carolyn idles herself at Final 5, and Sierra somehow leaves. And then Carolyn leaves at Final 4. And then it's Mike over Will and Dan.
Okay. I was thinking maybe, let's say Dan and one other person end up being ostracized at Final 6. Like, let's say Mike wins immunity, and Dan and Sierra are seen as a tight pair. So the other three gang up on them. Mike votes with them because why not? And then they try to split it 2 versus 2, but Dan has his vote and it ends up overpowering Rodney or something? Like,
well, I feel like in that scenario, it would just be Mike, Dan, and Sierra now taking a majority here at Final 6 because of Dan's double vote. That's certainly within the realm of possibility. I also think that would fall on Rodney, just not only because he seems like more of an ostensible challenge threat because he's got muscles, which is a completely flawed logic, but nonetheless... and then Mama C idles herself at Final 5 and is clearly on the outs at Final 4.
Yeah, I could actually see... Like, I don't think it's a guarantee that Will and Dan both survive for that long, because if you do want to keep the people around who can beat Mike, then I think you would have to keep Sierra just in case there is some kind of balance challenge in there, and also she seems fairly unlikely to get the votes in the end. But beyond that...
Well, this is what I think. I think next week's episode is going to be one of two things. Either very unlikely Carolyn gets blindsided with an idol because she's viewed as too big of a threat, or far more likely Rodney, who has been built up as this big character, particularly these last couple of weeks, but certainly throughout the course of the season, is this week's boot. Like, when we're watching tomorrow night, that's going to be it. It's going to be the end of Rodney.
Yeah, maybe, like, for Dan's second vote to actually do something, we're saying it would have to be played at Final Five, right? Where it's three versus two, and then he's able to force a tie or something. So in that case, maybe Sierra goes to Final Six somehow. Like, let's say Carolyn uses her idol or something, or whatever, and Sierra ends up going home. Then at Final Five, Dan is aware that he's on the outs, teams up with Mike. They use a second vote, get out, maybe Rodney, maybe Carolyn, whatever. And then it just goes from there, but that doesn't really make sense either.
Yeah, I guess for me at least, there are two possible outcomes here. It is Mike over Dan and Will, or Mike over Dan and Sierra. Either way, I don't see the other two getting more than a combined one vote from the jury. So I think that's all there is to it for the rest of this season. Mike is your winner. Congratulations, Mike Holloway. There you go, buddy. All right. Song of Ascent's coming in, Tom.
It's got to be kind of galling for Mike knowing that on May the 20th, nobody is going to care about the fact that he's just won Survivor and $1 million. Like, all of that plays second fiddle to the season 31 vote.
Well, for me, at least certainly if I was in Mike's spot, if I'm coming home from my season and I know I'm about to win $1 million, and then suddenly with 2 weeks left, this pops up, there is nothing more in the world that I would want than that. From all of the focus being taken off of me, letting me go live my life with my $1 million, and you guys all focus on this other shit.
I don't know. I would want to bask in the glory for a bit, I think.
Possibly. It's hard to say without being in that position.
It's annoying that they've banned Carolyn and Mike from taking part in the season 31 machinations, if you like, on Twitter, because if I was in Mike's position here, I would just be doing everything I can to disrupt the vote, to draw attention to myself, to make sure everyone else was completely miserable, because I wouldn't want to be stood up in this way.
Yeah, it is, I think, convenient that Mike is not allowed to campaign for season 31 just yet. I honestly feel like even if Mike was allowed to campaign, he wouldn't be doing it at this point. Like, he's counting his money. He knows he's not going to be back out there.
Honestly, I'm kind of stunned that Rodney isn't in the mix for season 31.
So am I. I'm disappointed that Rodney's not in the mix, although I feel like maybe they were thinking too much recency bias, and maybe they just... I think someone on RHAP made a great point that I think they did that production did just love Max Dawson, and it probably came down to Max or Rodney.
What if, okay, and this is obviously not going to happen, but humor me for a moment. What if Mike narrowly loses the Final Four immunity challenge, gets voted out, you know, comes this close to winning but can't pull it off, Carolyn wins the season, and then they feel really sorry for Mike, so they put him back in the voting pool, but they need to really big up his edit so there's a guarantee that he comes back? Like, could that... Okay.
This is where I wish we had a soundboard so I could drop in Rodney's 0.0000000% chance. Because, again, just think back to... All you ever have to think back to is if Mike had fucked up that badly at the auction and done anything but won the season, he would have looked like a total moron.
Well, what if? Because... You've seen so many idiots on the like Survivor Facebook fan page saying, oh my god, the fact that Mike and Carolyn are in the voting pool proves that neither of them wins a season. What a spoiler. Given that that is the case, they need to put the winner in the mix there, as well as someone who's just filler. So why would you include Carolyn unless Carolyn is the winner and Mike is the one that you actually want to bring back?
Well, because Carolyn, as mentioned, is one of the top returning candidates, in my view. And also, because if you don't include Mike, that is a much bigger spoiler than including Mike. Because if you don't include Mike and he's getting this edit, it's, well, obviously Mike goes on to win. Not that it's not already obviously Mike goes on to win.
Okay, so instead of making that statement about Mike, you put him in the pool anyway. But Carolyn is your winner. And so the fact that she's included in the pool... makes you think that she's the filler when in actual fact she's the one who, I don't know, whatever.
All right, you're Dom, I feel like this is the classic, our biggest mistake that we always regularly make as podcasters is we give people, specifically in this case, the editors, far too much credit. People are dumb. It's exactly what you think it is.
See, the thing is, other than you, I don't think that anybody really wants to see Carolyn back that badly. And also, if she wasn't on exactly this season, like if she was on season 25 or something, no one would be angling to say, oh, we need Carolyn Rivera back on our TV screens. Not that I have anything against Carolyn necessarily. It's just, you know, she doesn't really stand out, even in a pool which includes Michaela Wingle, Natalie Tenorelli, and so forth.
I strongly disagree with that. I feel like if we'd seen Carolyn play any season and she'd gone out there with the aggressiveness and priorities that she's in, entertainment value that she seems to have, not any season. Listen, if she's on Cook Islands, fuck off. But if she's on any post Heroes versus Villains season, I think Carolyn is 100% the exact type of older woman I want on Survivor.
It's like you're watching a completely different show. Like I have not seen that opinion echoed by anybody, not on Sucks, not on Reddit, not anywhere. I don't think, even if you're absolutely right about everything you've just said, which you're not, I don't think that she's even in contention to get that many votes.
I'm saying for me, as far as what I'm wanting to see on my TV when I'm watching Survivor, give me Carolyn over Dawn, give me Carolyn over Monica Culpepper, these older women who return, that's not even a discussion, give me Carolyn over them.
Okay, I can agree with that, but I don't know. I feel like they have that base pretty strongly covered already.
Okay. Well, Dom, I think let's just do it. Let's get into it. Let's get into season 31. And first of all, I know we kind of were talking some shit about how they are overshadowing all of the current season with all of this future season stuff. I got to say, thank God we actually have something else to talk about, because season 30 is atrocious at this point. And it could just be another blood versus water situation where obviously Tyson wins and we still have a month left of podcasting to do. They gave us a diversion this time. And Dom, I think the easiest way to do this, we haven't actually even been on air talking about this season together yet for the most part. Let's go through all of these casts, you know, all of these candidates. We'll talk about the locks. We'll talk about who we want. Let's get into all of that. And I think the order to take it is just the order that they are presented on the actual website for voting. So let's get into it. And I think let's start with the females just because they're up at the top of the page. And we begin with Sierra Easton. Sierra is obviously the biggest lock among Sierra and Cass, and probably Shireen are easily the biggest locks. But Sierra, I think in particular, will be out there. You can fucking bank on it.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to note right off the bat, because we see people like Jim Rice, I think, is a perfect example, who is consciously trying to make enemies and stir up drama and make himself look memorable before the season even starts, just to secure his spot on the season in the first place. Whereas someone like Sierra doesn't have to do any of that to guarantee their spot, and so they can just be working behind the scenes, and, you know, quietly making alliances and not getting on anyone's bad side. And so that puts him in a much more privileged position coming into the game.
Right. I question, and I think this is a much bigger issue for Spencer, because I don't feel like Sierra has this general perception around her. So she may actually be in the perfect position where she knows she's going to be out there, but no one's going to be concerned about her being necessarily a production favorite. Sierra has completely got it made. Like, I don't follow Sierra on Twitter, but I can be pretty confident that she's not retweeting everyone who's saying, oh, I just voted for you. You know what I mean?
She absolutely is doing that.
I'm now remembering, isn't she a chronic retweeter from Yes. Blood versus? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's, I cannot stress this enough. There is a favorite button for a reason. Never, ever retweet compliments. Thank you.
Yeah, like, I can actually understand it in the context of this vote, because you need people to, like, think that enough other people are voting for you as well. But when it's just, I've just been voted off because, you know, I made some stupid mistake on my season, and then everyone is flooding me with tweets talking about how great I am, nobody else needs to see that, okay? Just favorite it and move on if you want.
Yeah, so, I mean, Sierra's going to be out there. Mark that down for your calendar come September. Another person who I think is definitely going to be out there is Chaos Cass. I don't see how she's going to miss this cast, despite the fact that in forcing people to vote for 10 people at a time, it essentially becomes an unpopularity contest. But I think a larger point is production doesn't care. Regardless of how many votes cast gets, she's going to be out there. This is not a straight-up vote.
Yeah, so let's actually elaborate on that, because when the voting was initially announced, in the fine print there was a clause saying something to the effect of, viewers' votes will partially determine who gets cast, and that was very quickly picked up upon by Dalton Ross and others who made sure to ask about that. And then there was a clarification a few days ago saying you know, that was a mistake on our part. Actually, the public voting will be the sole determinant of who gets cast, which I don't believe for a second. I mean, that is complete bullshit in my book.
100%. Yeah, they put that in there because I'm sure initially their legal department said, hey, maybe we should include this. But then as soon as people saw it, they said, let's get rid of this. But absolutely not. There is no way that this is legitimately going to be an actual top 10 vote getters are the final cast from each gender. If Cass misses the top 10 votes, she will be out there and someone will get bumped.
Yeah, and to go back to your first point there, the fact that you have to vote for 10 people, when we were initially discussing this, we were thinking in terms of, well, who is the most popular? And someone like Cass, who is heavily disliked by a certain section of the fan base, but very strongly well-liked by another, that's going to cancel out to some degree. And so you're going to have the people who really like Cass voting constantly to make sure that she gets on. But when you are being forced to vote for 10 people out of a pool of 16... what that means is the people who you feel kind of strongly about, but not really, you know, if they are on spot 8 or 9 on your most wanted list, that's still fine because, you know, they still get a vote cast for them. But if there's someone on there that you do strongly dislike, so much so that you don't vote for them, well, that's going to be a much heavier thing in that case. And so someone like Cass would be in a lot more power because of that. But I agree with you. Cass is making it on no matter what. And if they have to find a way to do it, then they will.
Yeah. And the thing that astounds me is the older woman demographic typically seems to love Cass and feel like she's doing a great job holding it down for them. Cass is a moron. Cass is out here saying she's got her spot locked in. And she's saying, you should vote me back on because I want to fuck things up for other people. When you know you're going to be out there, that is the last thing you want to be saying.
No.
What you want is Denise or you want Carolyn. You want someone who can actually do an adequate job. Cass is completely oblivious and absolutely incapable of putting herself in anyone else's shoes.
Well, firstly, I don't think that the older women out there are voting for Cass just so that they can see the, you know, their champion go on and win it for the older women or anything. I think, you know, they enjoyed what they saw from Cass the first time round and they want to see that again. And I think that's true of anyone who wants to see Cass back, right? They're not hoping that she's going to come back and change what she did. They're hoping that she's going to be exactly what she was the first time round. And that's why I personally am very happy to see Cass back, because we're not relying on her showing some new aspect of her personality. We got what we wanted from her the first time and we want a lot more of it.
No, I totally agree with that. Listen, I'm happy to see Cass back on another season. I think she brings a ton to a season. Kageyan certainly would not have been nearly as good as it was without Cass clicking buttons, essentially. But to say that Cass is good, like, I am positive that there is a very sizable contingent that thinks Cass is the one holding it down for my type of person. Those people are massively incorrect as far as what Cass is actually bringing to the table as a player.
Right.
Like Cass is historically bad at Survivor.
I don't know.
Historically.
Okay, but even if that's the case, people aren't voting for who they think is most likely to win the game or who's most likely to have the best shot, because that's like a, you know, that's just not a logical reason to vote for someone.
No, I agree, but there certainly is a contingent out there that is way into Cass because they feel like they're holding it down for their type and they are wildly off base, in my opinion.
Okay, but it's not like you have one spot on your ballot for Cass or Carolyn and you think, well, I like Cass more as a character, but Carolyn has a better shot at winning the game, so I'm going to vote for Carolyn. Like, no one's actually going to think like that.
I agree. Okay. That's a good point.
Like, if you value that strongly enough that you're voting for Cass, you're voting for Carolyn as well. You're just discarding someone else from your ballot.
Yeah. Certainly. So, I mean, Cass is going to be out there. She's in all likelihood going to be. I don't know how they're not going to put her on Spencer's team. Like, that, it seems obvious to put her on Spencer's team. So that should be hilarious. Let's move on to someone that I'm not so sure about, but I certainly wouldn't hate seeing back. And that's Monica Padilla, of course, from the Galoo team over in Survivor Samoa. Do you think she has a real chance here?
I actually think she does. You know, looking at the reactions I've seen to various people's interviews, she seems to have one of the more universally positive receptions. And to be fair, a lot of that is, I wasn't voting for Monica before, but I'm strongly considering it now. So she was starting from a position of weakness. But I think a lot of people are, especially given some of the other options on the list, you know, they are going to be very strongly looking at her as someone to vote in this time.
Yeah, I would actually personally be really interested in seeing Mopah play again here. I think that one could easily go either way. I think she's certainly one of the fringe candidates.
Yeah, I don't know how much I actually like her or how good she's going to be at the game if she does return, but she's someone who I think will keep it interesting and, you know, she will give very good confessionals and not shy away from being part of the action, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah, definitely. So someone that I don't think anyone really wants to see out there, and I don't see how they're going to make it out there, is Natalie Tenorelli. Is there any chance she's out there?
There's a chance, because some people will think, I don't know who any of these people are, but this one looks hot, so I'm going to vote for her, which is not a good reason to do anything or to vote for someone back on Survivor, but there will be some of those people out there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, Natalie Tenorelli, a pretty underwhelming candidate in my book. I'm certainly one of my hard pass candidates.
Although, one reason to vote her back, and I think it's actually a pretty good reason, is people will be so tilted when they lose to Natalie Tenorelli at something. Like, if Natalie Tenorelli ends up being the swing vote in some weird situation and she votes you out, you're going to be pissed about that for a long time, especially if you're someone like Jeremy or Vetus or Troyzan, someone who prides themselves on being like some great mastermind as a player. You know, and that could be fantastic to watch. If someone is able to take her under their wing and use her to take out all of these alpha male rivals, then that could be a recipe for carnage.
Yeah, I mean, if you are Jeremy or Jeff Varner or Vetus or whatever, I would say a great service you could do to yourself right now is preparing yourself mentally for having to encounter that situation where you're losing to someone like Natalie Tenorelli. And then I also think, prepare yourself for, you're going to be mad enough to vote for someone like Natalie Tenorelli, and you're going to be able to justify it months down the line.
Yeah, and you will spend years thereafter rationalizing that to yourself and also to hordes of angry viewers who understandably will be asking, well, you're someone who seems to value good gameplay, whatever you think that means, and then you turn around and vote for someone like that out of spite. You know, that's not really a consistent position, and they won't really have a good answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for that to happen, you know, in December. Well, I guess we'll find out which, you know, tertiary female ends up being the beneficiary this year. Let's move on to a non-tertiary female, and I'm going to say my number one female candidate, PG Law. I listened to you and Jay Fisher talk about her. I am all in on seeing PG back.
Yeah, PG's someone who is making a good case for herself out there on various media outlets and maybe stay tuned on that front. And I think she's someone who was in an awkward position as far as timing went the first time around, because you think about when her season occurred. You had Amanda and James coming back immediately thereafter for Micronesia, and then again in four seasons' time for Heroes vs. Villains, with Courtney joining them there as well. And so you almost reached a saturation point with China, where I think the producers felt they'd got all they wanted to see out of that season again, and maybe they would bring Todd back if they wanted winners or something, but they didn't really give her a second thought. So it's very good to see her back in the mix now.
Absolutely. And wasn't she asked, is this on the record that she was asked for fans versus favorites? So it's entirely possible, if she had accepted that PG would have been back for Heroes versus Villains and would right now be like an iconic Survivor player.
Yeah, I believe she was, or at least I think she got the call. But you get this all the time where someone gets a call because that's just like a routine part of what casting has to do. And then for years after that, they're telling people, I was this close to making it on the season, but got cut at the last minute or something.
Right, I was just listening to Savage on RHAP saying, yeah, I've been in the mix three or four times, when it seems clear to me, and anyone paying attention, that given how many people seem to think they were in the mix three or four times, casting just calls a ton of people and gets their hopes up, and then they cut them as they see fit.
Yeah, or like how Scoopin was scheduled to be on like 15 different seasons at various points.
Yeah, one thing Dom mentioned is perhaps stay tuned on the PG front. We were not planning on doing any kind of interviews. I really don't see the point in them. No one actually cares what people say on our podcast. But PG is someone I know we both feel very strongly about. We have reached out to her. She does seem interested. Hopefully stay tuned on that front. That would be, I think, the one interview we would do. And I am more than happy to fully endorse PG.
Yeah, and this is an excellent opportunity for lesser-known podcasters like us to actually guilt trip people into coming on our show, because they know if there's even a small chance that it will get them 25 extra votes or whatever, then they can start justifying that to themselves. Whereas under normal circumstances, there's no point they would waste an hour out of their day to come and talk to us.
Well, to me, it seems like they're willing to do any podcast, so I don't really feel that special. But yeah, so let's move on. Let's get into Sabrina. Someone I was kind of surprised to see on the list, but I do get it. But certainly, I'm not going to lose sleep if Sabrina's not out there, and I'm also not going to be irate if she is out there. She's someone I think had a lot more potential than we actually got to see because she ended up being a losing finalist. But at the same time, I'm not like fully confident that she's going to just kill it on this next season.
Yeah, I liked her well enough. I would like to see her out there again, and she would be on my ballot. But yeah, someone who I don't think really engenders strong emotions either way. And, you know, the most definitive statement I can make is I'm glad she's there over Chelsea.
Yeah, I actually would co-sign that. I feel like Chelsea is just, we've seen everything we're ever going to see out of Chelsea, whereas that may not be the case with Sabrina. And certainly is not the case with the number top three all-time female casting choice, Stephanie Valencia. What's your take on this? Stephanie, certainly, while I don't necessarily agree with Cost that she's one of the most intricate and complex characters among females that we've ever seen, she is absolutely someone I would love to see play again. And I couldn't be happier to be voting for Stephanie Valencia. Not that I'm voting.
She's like a worse version of Abby to me. Like Abby is entertaining, and you can take pleasure in the arguments that she gets into with people. Stephanie is just irritating. Like, she's just a nuisance to be swallowed away, I think.
I don't know about that. I feel like Stephanie is out there really trying to mix things up, get herself in a position to succeed. I don't know how well that's ever going to go for her, but she is, given the just plethora of absolute brain-dead bikini babes we see in her typical demographic, give me Stephanie Valencia all day over just a random 23-year-old Survivor player.
Yeah,
girl.
I would very much like to be proven wrong about her, but I don't think I will be. And I don't think I will get a chance to be proven wrong, because I'm not sure how likely she is to make the cast.
Yeah, I don't know how likely she is either. And I do think even if she makes the cast, she could quite easily meet the same fate, where she gets a little aggressive early on and just finds herself gone. Yeah, so a lot, I honestly think a lot up in the air for Stephanie Valencia. Sorry, not someone I'm looking at as like a winner pick or anything. Someone I am at least considering as a winner pick, because she seems like just kind of the perfect type to win an All-Star season. Tasha here from Cagayan. I'm wondering how much you think if recency bias is going to help or hurt Tasha, because I feel like we're of course going to get a lot of people from the very recent seasons, but I feel like with Tasha and also with Max Dawson, that may actually hurt them because they're the less compelling people from those recent seasons.
Perhaps. I think it will end up helping them more than hurting them. Like, Max is someone who, based on his performance, if he was there, you know, 5 to 8 seasons ago, I don't think would even be in the conversation here. But given that he was so recent, he's able to parlay that into a much stronger case for himself. I think for Tasha, it's interesting. I was expecting there to be a lot more hype about Tasha than I've seen, even from people who were fans of hers as the season was airing. And I think part of that is she hasn't really kept in touch with the Survivor scene, if you like, since her season. I think she kind of swore off the experience for a bit. And now that she's in the mix again, she is campaigning on Twitter and the like, but she's not someone who has this long history of like going on Reddit for votes or anything like that. She's someone who I think is more reserved, and I think certainly wants to be back on the show, but is not really making it the focus of her life in the short term.
Right. I think the number one most hilarious thing that has come out of this entire process is the number of people coming out of the woodwork who suddenly care what the fans think now that it's actually up to the fans, at least in theory. Their future is in the fans' hands, who could not have cared less after their season, you know, during and after their seasons were airing. But yeah, Tasha, someone I like a lot of these women, honestly, with the women in general, there are so many that I'm not going to care one way or the other whether or not they're out there. Yeah. So let's move on to one of the OGs, someone I actually am very much excited to potentially see back, and someone I think actually has a very good chance, is Teresa Cooper, T-Bird. I think it would be really fun to see T-Bird back out here. I think she also could potentially win. I think typically we'll save the how is this person going to do until after we see the final cast. But certainly T-Bird, someone I would be excited to see back.
Yeah, she's someone who I didn't have very strong opinions about from Africa, because, you know, when I was first getting acquainted with Survivor and watching all the seasons, Africa was one which I really didn't remember in that much detail. But her enthusiasm is so infectious. Like, she, for years now, for over a decade, has been, you know, responding to every fan who gets in touch with her, who has always been taking part in online discussions and keeping in touch with the show. And, you know, she really wants this. And I think regardless of how well she might do as a player, I think she was quite good on Africa and would be decent again. She's someone who I think will just really lift the tone of the season in a good way.
Absolutely. I think that's a very good point. T-Bird's someone I'd be actively excited to see back out there, really hoping she makes it. I think she will. I think she will be out there. In the same kind of mold, but I think a little more aggressive, someone we've been talking a lot about over these last few months, Mama C, my girl. I am all in on seeing Carolyn back out there. Fuck Shireen. Give me Carolyn 100% of the time over Shireen.
I
shouldn't say fuck Shireen, but I do like Shireen and want her to see, and I do want to see her out there. But if I had to choose between the two, this is not even close. Give me Carolyn.
I will let you make the case for Carolyn because I still fail to see what really gets you excited about her.
I just feel like for the, particularly for the older woman demographic, but even just for the woman demographic or just the player demographic out there, I want players who are going to play Survivor to win. And Carolyn is certainly demonstrating herself so far this season to be exactly that type. She has the, aggressiveness is the wrong word, but she has the ambition to do things that I think a massive percentage of people that they would be willing to cast would never have the inclination to do. I am totally sold on Carolyn. I would love to see her back.
Okay, I am unconvinced for now, but hopefully I can change my tune on that in a few weeks' time. Who do we want to move on to next?
Let's move on to Kelly with an E. That is another one of my girls, Kelly Wentworth. I think actually Kelly, like we've said about a couple other people, if she played even on season like 22, would not even be in the discussion. But I do really feel like she's someone who absolutely could use a second chance. I think she could substantially improve. I have never wavered on the fact that I think she could be a great Survivor player, certainly in my winner mix here, just based on who actually wins All-Star season. Stop laughing at me, Dom.
Okay. I think you are absolutely off base about that, and I look forward to retweeting every complimentary tweet you've made about her in a few weeks when she just gets voted off unceremoniously pre-merge. But I, like you, I'm actually very excited to see her back because Kelly, to me, is like the anti-Joe. But I think Joe is maybe the most offensive person in this cast to me because just by virtue of being like this attractive, nice, young white guy who has never said a bad word about anybody, people are just falling over themselves to vote for him. Whereas Kelly is like the same thing, and yet so many people just hate her for reasons that I can't possibly fathom, that I would love to see her go back on again and just to see the jimmies of those people get severely rustled for the next few months.
Let me acknowledge, I obviously understand that if I'm going out on a limb again about Kelly Wentworth and this doesn't work out, I'm going to look like the biggest moron ever. Regardless of her result this time, nothing will change my opinion that she is one of the better female players in this cast. Unless she goes out there and tanks it. But as far as things that happen in All-Star, listen, All-Star seasons are not the same. Dom is cracking up right now. And I feel very offended. All-Star seasons are not the same as regular seasons. I see things in Kelly that I feel like are just objectively good things to be playing Survivor.
You literally just said, I will not let her results change my opinion of her unless she does badly.
No, I said, unless she's abrasive or whatever, but if she goes out early, that will not impact my view of her if I see the same thing I feel like I've been seeing throughout with Kelly.
Well, I'm glad to see that you have found religion at long last.
All right. Well, I do you think Kelly's actually going to make it out there? Because I think I could see her being on the bubble. It would not shock me if she missed it. I do think she's a favorite to get out there, though.
I feel like she is right on the bubble. I don't know who she's competing with for those last few slots. Like maybe it's Monica, maybe it's Kimmy. Those are two people I've seen thrown around there. I think she's clearly putting a lot of effort into this and doing everything she can to secure votes, and I like that a lot. And I admire that enthusiasm. I don't know how effective it's going to be, but you know, I'm hoping that the people who are voting without much knowledge of who any of these people are will be drawn to Kelly and throw a vote her way.
Okay. I guess what my final closing thought is, I obviously understand that if she does anything other than go on to win, I'm probably going to be argued as looking like a moron and having been way off base about Kelly since 2014. Definitely going to be like, I absolutely stand by Kelly as having a fantastic skill set for Survivor. Okay. So let's move on now to yet another Kelly, and that is season one's Kelly Wigglesworth. I almost said Wentworth again. Incidentally, there is nothing I want more from season 31 than a split vote between Kelly and Kelly that somehow gets botched.
Yes, or for someone to just write down Kelly and Jeff has to ask them for clarification. Just, you know, any potential for the game to be broken in that way is perfect for me.
That's what I was thinking is, if I know it's going to be a close vote between those two, and I just put down Kelly W, and then they ask for clarification, I can see where all of the other votes have been going if it's one of the later votes, and I can then clarify it on that way.
I would put money on Keith to mess that up somehow.
Yeah, that seems like a safe bet. Is Kelly Wigglesworth a lock in your mind? Because it seems like the season one thing almost makes her a lock.
I would say so. And even if she weren't, just on the basis of the fan voting, the fact that she's been included in this cast is a sign that CBS wants her on the show. And for that reason, there's no way she doesn't make it.
Yeah. And I would say there is virtually no way that she doesn't get super owned and is probably an early boot, because I did listen to her 10 minutes on RHAP. In fairness, it was 15 minutes. But she has got absolutely no idea what she's in for.
Yeah, and that's actually why I don't want to see her back. I think that, you know, if your lasting memory of Kelly is she was on season 31 for 3 episodes and then just got booted without doing anything or making any relationships with people, then it's almost like that tarnishes her legacy, where, you know, going back to season one, she was one of the most iconic people in the broad sweep of the franchise. And to put that at risk just to maybe last for a few votes on this season just doesn't seem worth it to me.
Yeah, I would, if I'm casting a vote for the females, which I have yet to do, Kelly would not be on my ballot. I have very little interest in seeing Kelly back for everything you just said. Similarly, I would say the same thing about Kimmy Kappenberg, although I'd much rather see Kimmy back than Kelly, just because I feel like Kimmy can at least bring it potentially from an entertainment standpoint. And great, I have not seen any kind of press with Kimmy this season. I haven't heard any interviews or anything. I have no idea what she's like apart from 15 years ago. That being said, I feel like I've gotten what I need out of Kimmy Kappenberg. I don't know. I certainly wouldn't be heartbroken if she misses it. I don't know how I feel about how good her chances are to actually get out there. She almost seems like the most likely of the older people to not get out there, right?
Yeah, and I think the prestige that you get from being one of the original cast members only really extends as far as the first season. You know, so if it's like a pre-merge boot from Australia, I don't think really has that same kind of cachet.
Yeah, I could easily see Kimmy being in there to be the one OG who actually misses out. And another person that I think is probably going to miss out, like, I can't even fathom how they're going to be out there. And like, if this person is out there, lock it in that this was a production decision because they want more hot girls. And this is not a fan vote for who got out there. That is Michaela Wingle from South Pacific. Well, I do think that she could have brought a lot more to the season, and I would have loved it to see that vote go the other way, where Michaela ends up staying over Edna. Like, I think that is a literally season-changing vote that you can check out any of our 5 retrospectives with South Pacific members to hear more on that. I do not need to see Michaela out there.
Yeah, Michaela does not need to be the 6th or 7th South Pacific person to return to play again.
Yeah, so Michaela is someone I don't need to be out there. And just quickly back to Kimmy, I'm now realizing if Varner and Kimmy both get out there, we will have seen half of the cast from Survivor Australia. 8 out of 16 people return. But let's get on to the next person that I think is actually the third female lock, and that is Shireen. Do you agree, first of all, that Shireen will be out there?
Yeah, I have to imagine so. I think there are enough people who feel sympathy towards her just based on what she's been through, and also just out of recency bias, like she was literally on your screen 2 weeks ago and is still on there for the jury segments and everything else. So I have a hard time seeing her not making it. As for whether she'll do better, I think, you know, there will be more people out there like Max, or, you know, other people who really do have this obsessive interest in Survivor that she can maybe bond with and get along better with. And if you listen to a lot of the interviews by the others, a lot of them say, oh, I kind of like Shireen. I understand where she was coming from. I don't know why people found her so annoying. So I think she could actually have a decent future on this season.
Okay. I don't know if I ever really realistically see Shireen winning this season, just giving the makeup of the other people. Listen, if there were all a bunch of Max Dawsons out there, then totally. But I don't know how well she's going to mesh with virtually anyone else in this cast. I feel like Spencer would probably like her because he's a super fan or whatever. But I don't know, when push comes to shove and they're voting it's the jury vote. I'm not really seeing Shireen getting a lot of victory votes here.
Yeah, and I can certainly imagine over time those good initial impressions wearing off and then that turning into outright dislike. But I think she starts in a much better position than she did in this season.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like she's also just, when people kind of know what they're dealing with, going to be a lot easier to deal with. When Shireen shows up on the beach for the beginning of Worlds Apart is a lot different than Shireen showing up on the beach as a known quantity, I feel like. But Shireen's going to be out there. So plenty more coming on Shireen over these next few months. Yeah, so all the best, I guess, out there for Shireen. Let's move on to the final female in the group. That is Abby Maria. I feel like with Sierra and Cass and Shireen as locks, I really feel like Abby is the next most likely, although I don't think it's quite 100%. I think she is overwhelmingly likely to be there.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine in my book. I think Abby is someone who... I didn't really like Abby that much as her season was airing. Like, I didn't think she was that great a character like everyone else seemed to. But I'm actually kind of excited to see what she can do on a second go round.
Yeah, I mean, Abby for me is a lot like Cass, where I'm happy to see her go out there and just fuck things up for everyone else.
Yeah, I think the difference there is that Cass is deliberately trying to fuck things up, and she's kind of aware of that fact and plays into it. Whereas Abby is just kind of stumbling around unaware. And if you think, you know, if you find that amusing, then great. I prefer the cast types usually, but, you know, there's room in there for Abby too, and I certainly hope she makes it in.
Yeah. So I guess among the females, we've got, I mean, you can not only pencil it in, you can pen it in, you can tattoo it on your body. Sierra, Cass, and Shireen are going to be there. I think with those three just as givens, give me PG, give me Kelly Wentworth, give me Carolyn. I really don't care about the others. I guess I'd like to see T-Bird, but I could take or leave pretty much anyone else.
Yeah, my 10 from that group was PG, Monica, Sierra, Cass, Kelly Wentworth, Abby, Sabrina, T-Bird, Shireen, and Tasha, which I think is a pretty good group. There are a few people there I'm not that excited about, but overall I think it's a decently strong cast.
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier to be okay with whatever the female cast ends up as. Whereas with the men, I think there are a lot more guys I would definitely love to see and a lot of guys I would definitely love to not see. And the place I guess let's start with the guys. Jeremy, I feel like, first of all, with the guys, Joe and Spencer are there. That is the clearest thing in the world. I feel like Jeremy, kind of like Abby, is not quite a lock, but certainly like 95%.
Maybe, which is really disappointing if that's the case, because Jeremy is both the most replaceable and the least interesting of his archetype, I think.
Interesting. Why do you, any reasons you say that? Because I feel like Jeremy could definitely bring a lot to a season.
In what way? I mean, we saw him bring everything he could bring to season 29, and it wasn't that inspiring.
Well, I thought he definitely brought it to season 29.
How?
I thought the problem with season 29 was not Jeremy.
Yeah, it absolutely was, Jeremy. It's very easy to just talk about how smart you are and how dumb everybody else is. There are other people on this list who do that. Like, I think that's an accusation that gets leveled at Jim a lot. But look at someone like Jim. Yeah, he gives great confessionals. He's always going to be mixing it up with people. He's going to be the heel if he needs to be. Whereas Jeremy is just sour. He's like, oh, these people are so dumb for not playing perfectly into his hands. I mean, it's, you know, there's no sense of back and forth out of Jeremy. It's, you know, if something doesn't fit into Jeremy's story, he has no time for it, and that's just not, that's not a trait of a compelling character or a compelling player.
Okay. See, for me, the thing is, I agree that he is kind of sour and he is super negative for the most part, and he is quite demeaning. At the same time, I do not feel that Jeremy was wrong in saying that he was surrounded by complete morons in San Juan del Sur, and I absolutely believe that in his mind, they very much fucked up in voting him out.
But he was also one of those morons. Like, he's, all of this criticism starts from the place of he is implicitly better than them, which he wasn't. I mean, he got firmly outplayed by both Missy and John in that instance.
No, I agree, but I do feel like he does have a legitimate gripe that perhaps thinking players replacing the Keiths of the world or whomever from San Juan del Sur, things may have gone differently. Like, I feel like there is an actual complaint there.
No, thinking players would have run circles around him even more than the rest of his guys already did.
Right, but at least that's acceptable in his mind. Is if I get outplayed, I get outplayed. But what I don't want is to be in a position where people should obviously do one thing, but they're too stupid to not see it.
Okay, but I don't see why his inability to get over the fact that he was outplayed makes him a good character or a good player.
But I feel like that's completely separate. I don't feel like it has anything to do with whether or not he got outplayed or how bad his opposition was. I feel like Jeremy absolutely can bring something to a Survivor season.
But I'm just not seeing what that is. Like, I haven't seen anyone make a good case for Jeremy yet.
Okay, I don't know. I feel like he is... While he may not always be right, Dom, I don't feel like that's the metric by which we should be judging how good these people could be as returning players.
Well, what is the metric, then?
How entertaining they can be. What they can actually bring to a season. What their mindset is playing.
But we already said that Jeremy isn't that entertaining, and he isn't very good as a player, and doesn't have...
You said that!
Right, but I'm right. So, I mean, why would you disagree?
Okay, listen. Okay, I don't know. I'm certainly not unhappy in the slightest to see... Jeremy come back, and I think that in all likelihood will happen.
Jeremy is a firm no for me. He's right down there with Troy Zan and a few others, and I would like to see him get KO'd again by Keith or whichever female player he is least expecting to see there, just so that he can stew in Ponderosa for a bit and I don't have to botch him again.
Okay. All right, those are some hot takes on Jeremy. You mentioned Jim Rice, and he's the next one we're going to talk about. But I do feel similarly about Jim, where he was in a position where Cochran just absolutely fucked him for absolutely no reason, like suicidally fucked it, like tanked his own game to fuck not only himself, but Jim and all of Savai'i. Where I do truly feel like Jim, if there is a thinking, I know Cochran went on to do very well in Karamoan and end up winning the season and played well. I've always stood by that. But certainly not going to Rocks, there is an absolute horrific blunder.
Okay, but regardless, part of being a good Survivor player is stopping other players from being tempted to make those blunders when they don't benefit you.
I agree. I totally agree. And there was certainly more Jim could have done. But at the same time, Upolu was not flipping. And Cochran, in that, on his first time playing, feeling on the outs as he did, I don't feel like Jim could anticipate this scenario happening ahead of time. I feel like Jim absolutely has a reason to say he should get a second chance.
Okay, I don't think you can say the fact that I made a mistake or that I didn't stop someone else from making a mistake makes me deserving of a second chance. I think the relevant debate here is, especially with this male cast, you have so many players who aspire to be the mastermind and who, for whatever reason, fail to actually achieve that on their first time around. And so the question becomes, what more can they offer on top of that? And I think in Jim's case, he gives great confessionals. He just has this manner about him which makes him entertaining to watch. And you can see with this campaigning, firstly, he just wants it so badly. Like, he is putting his heart and soul into this. And I really respect that. And also, in doing so, he is getting into fights with other cast members. He is calling people out left and right. He is bringing the heat. And he is, and if he gets on there, it may be that this... This type of campaigning that he's doing makes his stay there short-lived, and in that case, that's going to be unfortunate, but for as long as he's there, he will be very entertaining to watch.
Well, speaking of campaigning, if you're Jim, or if you're Steven, or if you're someone that you feel like you have a chance, but you may be on the outs, if I'm in specifically Jim's shoes, I'm saying, not only vote for me, but also put votes on Spencer and Joe and Mike, because Spencer and Joe are going to be out there and Mike is about to be ineligible. And this way your vote is essentially just voting for 7 guys instead of 10. And thus it carries more weight.
Yeah. And I'm surprised, to be honest, that we haven't seen anyone else employ that strategy. Although I guess it looks a bit suspicious if you're saying, well, vote for me, but in doing so, also vote for these 3 other people, because if someone's on the fence about voting for you, maybe they don't like the other people who you're suggesting that they vote for, or they have some other reason not to vote for them or whatever. Whereas if you can just keep it to, vote for me because I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, that's a much more clean and simple pitch.
I don't know. I feel like anyone who's in a position to take that out on him would also understand why he was doing that. Like, he knows he's on the bubble. Everyone knows he's on the bubble. It's just a smart thing to do in his shoes. Yeah. So I would certainly love to see Jim back out there. Like, I think we were truly robbed of getting to see Jim Rice actually play like a post-merge game. I cannot rave enough about that idea to boot Elise there. I thought that was brilliant. I would love to see Jim back. Someone I would not love to see back. I've gone on record several times at this point saying this. I do not need more Keith. I said this at the end of season 29. I knew this bullshit was coming, that Keith would be a returnee. Keith is a fucking zero.
Why do you hate Keith so much?
He is not a player in the slightest
Who
sense.
Who cares?
He is not even... he's not entertaining to me. Like, it's just this guy doping around.
Right, but as season was airing, you agreed with me that he was hilarious and gave, he was one of the real kind of high points of the season.
Right, but what I said was, he is funny once. I do not need it a second time.
I don't know, like, if you listen to his RHAP interview, and by the way, good job, Rob Destinino, for just churning out 32 extra pieces of content just on the fly like that. That is a seriously impressive feat. But if you listen to Keith's interview there, there's a lot more in that reservoir. I mean, I guarantee you he will be bringing the humor for as long as he's there.
I think it is absolutely tragic that Keith is one of the more likely people out of this group of male candidates to return. Keith is probably a top five candidate.
Give me Keith over Jeremy every day of the week.
Okay. All right. So I guess a lot remains to be seen about Keith. I sadly believe he will be out there in all likelihood.
I agree.
Anything else on Keith?
I agree that he is likely to be out there, and I am overjoyed with that fact.
All right. Fantastic, Dom. I'm very happy for you. Let's move on to someone that I'm sure many people are on board with this, although I do have a couple of reservations about that you flagged up, and that is Shane Powers. And obviously this guy is phenomenal TV, historically good TV among Survivor competitors. That said, I think you brought this up in your podcast you did with Jay. I do have some real concerns that Shane's going to get out there and just go fucking bananas and quit or do something.
Yeah, and in a way that potentially could be uncomfortable to watch and not just entertaining. Listening to Shane's pregame stuff, he does seem to be aware of that possibility and understanding of what led to his performance the first time round. But at the same time, you know, when he's out there and he hasn't been on nicotine, and also he has all these people that he fucking hates around him and he has to suck up to them, I don't know how well that's going to turn out for him.
Right, and I'm not saying it's going to be Brandon Hansen, Kara Mullen. And I do recognize that we've seen Shane go cold turkey before, and while not be fine, he at least was able to get through it and so on. Shane, I don't feel like it's remotely unfair to say, Shane is not the most stable person in general. Like, he is very liable to just go off the deep end, and I am concerned about that. All of that being said, 100% on my ballot, I would be very disappointed if Shane is not out there. Yeah. So similarly, someone I'm sure the vast majority, if not everyone listening to this podcast, would be heartbroken if they are not out there. Lil Stevie Fishback. I feel like he's got a good chance. I feel like RHAP, you know, directly or indirectly, is absolutely massive, because when you look at this voting process, this is a fucking annoying process. That it's going to take some devoted fans to actually be voting multiple times. And I think those devoted fans are virtually across the board in Steven's corner.
Yeah, I think the people who turn up on the Survivor Facebook page to voice their discontent every week will not be willing to sit through some weird, unnecessarily complicated registration process just to cast a vote once or maybe twice.
Right, scrolling up and down, hey, did I get exactly 10 people in there? Like, no one's going to do that unless they really, really care. And I think Steven has the support of people who really, really care.
And also, most of the casuals share my philosophy of hating everything. And so when they get there and there are maybe two or three people that they both A, remember, and B, like and want to see again, if they now also have to vote for six or seven other people, they just won't, they're not going to bother. They're just, you know, going to sit it out.
Yeah, yeah. Or they'll just click 10 random boxes, and I feel like Steven's in the middle of the page, so that probably helps his chances on that. So, certainly plenty more to say about Steven, but I don't know what's even prudent right now. I feel like he's got a good chance to get out there. Certainly the best player in the cast, in my opinion. And maybe that will come back to haunt him, but absolutely would be devastated to not see Steven out there. Another person that I was not indifferent about at first, but I have certainly grown to want to see a lot more than I initially did. Jeff Varner. This guy is putting in work in this preseason stuff. I am all in on now seeing Jeff Varner back out there. I'm going to be sorely disappointed if he's not there.
Yeah, I had no great affection for Jeff coming into this process, but he certainly has impressed so far. And I think he, in contrast to a lot of these other people, is able to make whatever he's saying entertaining, even when it doesn't really have any relevance to the events that are going on. So I think from his career as a newscaster, he's able to really present himself in this very compelling way. You contrast that with someone like Jeremy, for instance, who in his video that he had to do for why he should be brought back, he had the same level of just incoherence about himself that he had during his jury speech when he was trying to make a case for Natalie. Where it was just, you could tell he wanted it, but he couldn't put that across in any interesting way.
Yeah, I think, you know, if, again, if we're fact, Spencer and Joe are out there, Steven, of course, would be my number one pick apart from that. I honestly feel like, actually, Jim Rice, but then Jeff Varner. Jim and Jeff really stand out to me as people that I have got to see back out there. Like, I feel like they are players of Survivor who are going to actually go out there, think about the game, be compelling television. They are, I love having these, like, 35-ish guys. Like, Jeff was 35 his first time. But he seems to be basically the same guy now that he's 49. These are exactly the type of people I want to see playing Survivor. So I would love to have Jeff Varner out there. Less so about Joe, the golden boy. We've already been through him all season. He's going to be there, and we're going to be giving the same generic commentary about him all season this coming season.
I hate that Joe is in this list. Firstly, because of what it represents. Whereas, like I was saying before, just by being like attractive and inoffensive and not having any kind of qualities or personality traits that might not endear you to someone, he is just on there by default because people love him. You know, the housewives who watch the show want to marry off their daughters to him. The guys want to be him, you know, all of this crap. And I think he will basically do exactly what he did on this season. He will go decently far into the game just by virtue of being good in challenges and likable. And then, yeah, at some point he'll be voted out for precisely those same reasons, and he won't offer anything on top of that.
Yeah, if anything, like, especially in an all-star season, Joe ain't making it past Final Seven. Like, I feel like that's even optimistic, whereas I could see him being an early boot in an all-star season, which would never otherwise be the case. So I don't know. I'm certainly with you that Joe, someone I'm less excited to see out there than many of the people on among these candidates, but it's going to happen, so we might as well just embrace it. Speaking of going to happen, I don't know if it's going to happen here for the next candidate, and that is Max Dawson, just because I feel like Wu is easily just the obvious filler person who's got no chance. I think other than that, everyone is in play, and I feel like of the other people who are actually in play, Max has by far the least likely chance of getting out there, just because it's almost like reverse recency bias, although I guess he wouldn't be on the list in the first place if he wasn't on a recent season, but because there are going to be so many people from recent seasons, he would be much better served having been the fifth boot on Survivor 12 than Survivor 30. You know what I mean? Like, production will realize, wow, we have a ton of people from the last four or five seasons, and I feel like Max, being the older guy and intellectual type, that doesn't separate him from this list of candidates like it would from a general Survivor cast. Like, incidentally, I looked this stat up. I did the math. The average age among these male contestants, if we exclude Spencer and Joe, who are both going to be in there 100%, listen to this, Dom. Average age, 43.3 years old. And if you exclude Mike, who's also not going to be there, 43.7. That is insane compared. Like, I love it, but it is crazy, right, that that's the case?
Yeah, that's just an absurd statistic. And I like it too. I don't think it's any coincidence that Philippines, which I know we both like a lot and which is one of the most universally respected seasons, I think. I don't think it's any coincidence that that season also had a very old cast on average.
No, I would love it if they would start skewing. I want nothing more than for a much older cast than average on season 31 to be a phenomenal season, and they start recognizing, oh, this would be great if we actually had capable adults playing. And I feel, listen to this, the median person, if we take Mike out and we just have 15 guys, the median person is Jim Rice at age 39. And there are, let's see, Wu is not going to be there, so realistically, the third youngest person after Spencer and Joe who's actually got a chance to be there is Vetus at age 35. That is remarkable to me, and I love it. So let's see.
Do you think that hurts someone like Spencer then, who, based on what you've said, is a full decade younger than the median, at least?
I absolutely do think that is an issue. I think the biggest thing Spencer has going against him, or the two biggest things I guess he has going against him, are number one, he is 22 years old, and the average age, as we said, 43.3. He is two decades under the average age. I feel like most of these guys are going to view him as a kid. Even Vetus, who is 35 years old, everyone but Joe among the men looks at Spencer as a child, and that is a massive problem for him. The other problem for Spencer is they all know that Jeff Probst wants to have sweet, sweet sex with him.
Is that a problem, though, or is it more like, could it create this weird father-son dynamic where they almost discount him as a threat because of his youth?
Maybe, but I feel like when you combine the youth with the knowledge that he is obviously production's favorite, that's going to be mad. going to mean bad things for Spencer. Yeah. But obviously Spencer's going to be out there. I am very much looking forward to seeing Spencer play again. I don't know how it's going. Like, we'll see how it goes. I could easily see it going poorly. I could easily see it going very well. Plenty remains to be seen with Spencer, I think, but he will definitely be out there. And so let's just move on. Let's get into Troyzan. And this is obviously the number one person on my obviously not list, as I do not need more. Maybe Keith even is the obviously not, because at least Troyzan's annoying.
Oh, fuck you. Troyzan is infinitely worse.
No, he is infinitely more annoying, but at least annoying is something. Keith is just a zero. I will take a negative over a zero. I will take Cass over Natalie Tenorelli.
Okay, so by the Kelly Wentworth principle, where they just annoy people for no reason, I want to see Keith back even more now, just because of how frustrated it will make you.
Okay, do you also want to see Troyzan back?
No, because I also hate Troyzan. So
actually, I would say, if you are a fan of this podcast and you like it when we get angry, you should be voting for Troyzan, because we are going to be severely rustled if he gets on.
Yeah, it's basically vote for Kelly Wentworth to make Sucks mad, and then vote for Troyzan to make us mad.
Yeah, yeah. So Troyzan is someone I certainly don't want to see back. I think he's going to be annoying as fuck if he's out there. I do think he has a good chance of getting out there. Do you think he's... I think he is one of the bubble guys, and it is going to break my goddamn heart to see him get out there over Jim Rice. But at the same time, I do understand why they would bring him back.
I think he's going to end up in exactly like 11th or 12th in terms of the voting.
Okay, interesting. And I actually, one thing as far as why Troyzan may or may not come back that actually I hadn't considered is Troyzan typically would be filling the older guy role, but as we've pointed out, there are more guys in their 50s than there are in their 20s on this ballot, and Jeff Varner is 49. Like, there are a lot of older guys that they don't need Troyzan to be the older guy. And maybe that actually helps the next person I was thinking of, that in my mind, there is no chance he's back out there, is Wu. Like, I don't understand how anyone is voting for Wu. But at the same time, because he's young, maybe he does get out there. He's the third youngest male candidate at 31.
Firstly, because recency bias is a big thing. And secondly, in a cast which is full of relatively interchangeable, like, older gamebot types, Wu stands out as someone who doesn't take the game too seriously, which is a good thing for him because he probably wouldn't be doing too well at it, despite your proclamations at the start of the season, and who just has this very light-hearted attitude, and who is not going to bring the season down into a place of negativity.
Right, and what I said preseason was that I think Wu is going to be better than 95% of players on accident than they are on purpose. And as we saw, he was in a position to win $1 million on accident that he just gave away.
Yeah, just like Cody, who you said the same thing about, and the two of them combined gave away $1.5 million to their BFF. So not quite sure how that's working out for them, but...
Well, Cody from Big Brother, not a mistakenly pronounced Colby, just for clarification, yeah. Okay, so Wu, I don't see how he's out there. Easily the number one person that will not be there in my mind, but who knows? I mean, stranger things have certainly happened when it comes to casting all-star seasons. Someone I've been dying to see for a long time that I still think would be really fun is Terry Dietz. What do you think about Terry?
Yeah, I don't know how good Terry's chances are, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, but I really hope he does make it on, and I think a lot of the criticisms that have been leveled at him over the years are either exaggerated or just miss the point. So, and I'm interested to see what he can do when those circumstances that gave rise to those criticisms the first time around don't apply anymore.
Right. Well, one thing I know I've heard you flag up before is Terry could be a whole different person if he's not backed into this corner and starts buying into his own hype, right? Where he's not clearly on the outs. I think the problem for Terry's chances are twofold. Number one is Shane being from the same season. Like, I feel like if Terry was on season 13 instead of 12, he would be in much better shape because Shane wouldn't have then been on his season. And similarly, I feel like if Andrew Savage was not in this mix, Terry would be in much better shape because they seem like totally the same type.
Yeah, if you dislike Terry because you think he's arrogant or anything else, he's going to look... He will look completely tame in comparison to some of the other people on this cast if they're out there together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So Terry is certainly someone I think I would easily near the top of my ballot among the men. So let's move on. I just mentioned Andrew Savage. I feel like there is not a major difference at this point because season 7 and season 12 were both just so long ago that they're basically in the same category of, post Amazon, pre heroes versus villains, or I guess probably pre fans versus favorites, that kind of middle era. Do you think that both Terry and Savage can make it? Because I would love nothing more, but I'm not sure how likely that is.
I don't think their chances are really tied together at all. I think Savage is there mainly because Jeff wants him to be there, whereas Terry does have his own fan base independent of everything else.
Yeah, as I tweeted out, it is absolutely shameless how much Jeff Probst loves Savage, to the point that in his promo video, Savage is dressed exactly like Jeff Probst. It is remarkable. He's wearing the blue shirt, sleeves rolled up, hook, rock necklace. Like, it is remarkable. I mean, and as someone tweeted back to me, I guess that's the look to stay to keep looking good when you're in your 50s. Savage is definitely someone on par with almost Aaron from China that I feel like got absolutely screwed by a completely bullshit twist. So I would definitely love to see him back. I think he is fantastic TV. I think he is an awful player and he will not succeed. But I would still love to see him fail. Yeah. So we move on. Another person that I think could easily be back in this older guy mold, who is also an awful player and who will not succeed, but I would love to see back. Brad Culpepper. What are your thoughts on Brad? Because I feel like he has been someone that production has been dying ever since they saw him the first time to just bring back for another 3 episodes.
Yeah, very odd timing to have him back and going through this whole casting process while he's in the middle of a disability lawsuit concerning his time on Survivor. Like, that is just, I have no idea how that made it past the CBS lawyers. But in any case, I think Brad is a favorite to finish last out of anyone in the fan voting.
In the fan voting?
Yeah.
That's actually not a bad, I don't disagree with that call, but at the same time, as we've mentioned, this is not a fan vote. If the vote doesn't go the way they want it, they will mix it up and they just won't tell us. So I definitely could see Culpepper easily missing out on the top 10, but I certainly think he's a favorite to be out there regardless. Yeah. So that'll be interesting. Although, simultaneously, he could easily miss. And then the last person that we have to talk about is Vetus, and this is another person that we've been just waiting for the time that they would actually get the call to come back and return, because it was not a matter of if, but when. So Vetus back officially in the mix, certainly someone I would love to see back out there, if only to watch him get owned super hard, because he is the wolfiest person on the planet.
Yeah, Vetus is...
Wolfier, Jim or Vetus?
Oh, Jim, certainly. Well, Vetus can kind of blend in, whereas Jim is just overtly wolfy in the biggest way possible.
I don't know. I feel like Vetus, especially given his history... Jim can at least claim I'm a team player above all else, whereas Vetus is just the most blatant schmoozer and bullshit artist.
Yeah, as Blood vs. Water, the first season, was airing, I was really high on Vetus, and that kind of gradually deflated as it became clear that his storyline was deflating, and then post-season I kind of thought, well, what did we actually get out of this we would want to see again? Because it's, you know, we had that whole storyline with his brother, but then that's contingent upon Aris being there as well. We had a lot of his thing about, I'm going to manipulate the women using my history and all of that. But then once people know his history, he can't do that anymore. And there's a lot of that unjustified, egotistical bravado that, again, will be punctured very quickly when it comes into conflict with other people in this cast. So I'm not really sure what we're hoping to see out of Vetus that we didn't see play out entirely the first time.
Well, I feel like Vetus is, at least just in a vacuum, very capable of making good TV. The thing that I flag, I mean, I'm positive we flagged this up as we were rapping on Blood vs. Water 1.0, is Vetus, I think, has tremendous equity his first time. But once people know about him and once they see his confessionals where he's just openly lying about everything and kind of rubbing it in the audience's faces of, oh, look at this. I don't see how he's ever expecting that to work out for his second time, coupled with the fact that he cast the vote for Monica instead of for Tyson. How are you ever going to be comfortable letting Vetus hit the jury here if you feel like you're in a position to win? I don't know. I feel like Vetus, while I would love to see him back out there trying super hard, because I do believe he will make great TV if he's given another chance, this is not going to end well, I feel like, for Vetus. But again, we'll save most of our actual projections for once we know the final cast. Dominic, I am just thrilled, first of all, as we look at the cast on the whole, that this is a much older cast than typically we will get on Survivor, and I love that. I am all about getting... I wish the average age on Survivor was closer to 35 than 25. It seems like it's so young. and it would be so much better on virtually all counts if we had, like, legitimate adults playing these games. Who is on your zero interest list? I know we've been through them individually, but for me at least, it's Natalie Tenorelli. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, certainly.
Not even remotely interested in that. Michaela?
Oh, she's even worse than Natalie in my book, because Natalie at least is kind of endearing at times, whereas Michaela is just kind of sleazy.
Okay, Woo, I just feel like is among the guys just not going to be doing anything, at least compared to what the rest of the cast could be doing.
Yeah, I understand why some people want to see Woo again, but I can't bring myself on board with that.
Yeah, Keith, I know you're on board with, so let's go on to Troy's end.
Yeah, certainly not.
Yeah, who are the people you absolutely have to have out there that might not make it?
That might not make it? We didn't spend too much time on Jim, so I didn't give a proper justification for it then. But you think back 3.5 years, Jim was our first ever interview. And this was at a time when we hadn't been doing this for very long, weren't very confident in what we were doing. And, you know, getting that interview with him helped set up interviews with other people from that cast and then from other seasons as well. And just really kind of lent a sense of legitimacy in my eyes to what we were doing back then. So because of that, I feel some sense of gratitude towards him. But even independent of that, like, you see everything that he's doing during this campaign. You listen to his interview with Rob, where he's just going off on people and really just bringing the heat. He will be memorable. And even if that results in him flaming out in dramatic fashion and being the second or third boot, that's fine in my book, because he will have really put everything he has into it. And that's really what you want to see beyond everything else.
Yeah, similarly for me. It was our sixth ever. We had done 5 podcasts, and then we got a hookup with Jim for the interview. He was willing to take a shot on us. That led to an interview with Albert. That led to Cochran, and that led to Sophie, and that led to Chris Doherty, and so on. I am positive that the vast majority of our listeners would never have heard of us had it not been for Jim Rice being willing to take a shot on us. All in on seeing Jim get back there. Please vote for Jim. And similarly, although she has not done a retrospective with us, I am so into PG being back out there just for... she is totally the type of woman that I want out there, and I am very willing to go out on a limb and say, not even that it's going out on a limb, but I am so happy to advocate for getting PG back out there. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously we'd love to see, like, Steven, who's not totally a lock, but I suppose close enough. Let's see. You got a winner pick yet, Dom?
I know.
It's a little early. It's slightly early.
I know you and Carlos have basically called it already for Steven, and I don't hate that call. I don't think it's like a 95% certainty like the two of you seem to. I think he has a decent chance, but will also be a high-profile target among a cast like this. I think this might be the season that bucks a trend in terms of, like, the most under-the-radar woman in the cast going on to win. I don't think that necessarily has to be the case this time. I think you could easily end up getting to, like, Final 6 or Final 5 where all of these male wannabe masterminds have gone after each other. The dust clears, one of them has emerged triumphant, and that person has a clear course of the finals at that point, at which point they would have a decent chance of taking home the money. I don't know who that would be necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, draw a name out of a hat. That's yeah. Who it's gonna be. Yeah.
So that makes it harder. It's so tough, though, because...
All right, well, while you're thinking about it, the more I'm looking over this list, and first let me clarify, I have said, Koss said Steven has all the equity to win. I said Steven is the best player, and that was back when Steven and Hayden are by far the best players. And I do stand by, Steven is easily the best player in this cast, but I do think that could be a problem for him. I think, you know what, I'm going T-Bird for my early winner pick. I feel like she's perfect to make it deep and then actually be able to scoop up a win. I would, and it would be great. So I'm early gut reaction is give me T-Bird to win.
I don't necessarily hate that. That is a hot take right there. I mean, that is something which we will certainly revisit in due course, no matter what happens.
Watch her not make the cast. And she was like, that would be an historic low is my winner pick. I've had some go out early. I had So Kim go out first this year. That would be even worse than So Kim. Yeah. All right, any omissions? Because I only have 2 that I thought really should have been in there, and I know one of them was probably unrealistic, and that was Dina Bennett. I've always wanted to see her back, and Helen Glover to a lesser extent. The guy that I wanted to see back, and he just made a video, which almost implied to me that he would have been willing to go back, Kenny Wong. Where is Kenny? I feel like Kenny was such a fun player.
Yeah, he would add some kind of variety to that, I think. I mean, he would also be one of these game body types, but I think being a lot younger than some of them, although not that much younger now because he's in his early 30s, I believe. But he still almost feels like he's Spencer's age, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he certainly looks and sounds like he's an uncomfortable 22-year-old still. So
right.
Yeah.
So just casting my mind back quickly, I think. I mean, someone like John Mitch, I actually wouldn't mind seeing back here again. I think Marty as well, although there are enough people here in that season 20 to season 30 range that you don't really need any more. Going back a bit beyond that, maybe someone like Jason from Samoa or something like that. That could be interesting. Marcus from Gabon, maybe. Like, there are lots of random people who have kind of been lost to time at this point who I don't think will ever be in the mix again, but...
Yeah, I totally spaced on Marty Piombo. He is absolutely. I cannot believe he's not part of this list. At the same time, can I just point out, it is not a fucking coincidence that all of these people that we want to see back in this returning pool, it is not a coincidence that the age is so high, and even excluding Marty not being on there, the compelling people are the adults. They are not the bikini babes. They are not the young bros.
Yeah, here's one specific request. Brian Corridon or anyone from Guatemala, I think it's still a travesty that no one from that season has been invited to play again yet.
Yeah, I would have been surprised if this had happened pre-Heroes versus Villains. I feel like Brian Corridon would have been a lock. But just because he played so long ago and because he was on specifically Guatemala, that I think they're all happy to just kind of sweep under the rug. I don't know. I'm not overly disappointed in seeing, admitted friend of the podcast, Brian Corridon. It's not surprising, at least, to not see him on here. I mean, I guess we could talk about, what do you think of the idea of second chances just as a concept for a season?
It's something which has been floating around for a long time now, and you go on various Survivor forums, you'd always see, like, who would you want back on a second chances season and stuff like that. And a lot of those lists of names always seem kind of random to me, but looking at this list, this is the most haphazard collection of people I think you could ever put together. So I think that's just a necessary part of the format. It's an interesting premise because you're saying implicitly these people are either good enough TV or good enough players to make an impression, but not good enough in either of those regards to be brought back for a full All-Star season. And so you're always going to end up with this cast, which is kind of like the B team of Survivor history, and that's not really a recipe for success. At the same time, it gives you an opening to see new things from people who maybe did get a raw deal on their first season. But I think if you're going to do that, you have to confine it to people who maybe did go out pre-merge or early post-merge or didn't make the jury, or there has to be some kind of cutoff. Like Sabrina, I think, is someone who I do want to see back, but having her back for a second chance this season when she made the finals and got some votes just seems a bit strange to me.
Well, I don't feel like it's necessarily true that everyone in this cast would not be worthy of an All-Star season. Like, if they decided to do an All-Star season again right now and open the pool up to everyone instead of one-time players who didn't win, Spencer and Sierra and Cass and Shireen would still be in there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is they've taken the people who they had earmarked for an All-Star season as soon as they got voted out and combined that with people who they didn't have earmarked for an All-Star season and probably would not have brought back if it weren't for a second chances format, and just kind of mashed those together without any further thought.
Okay, well, for me at least, I like that they're doing this. I like that someone like Jim Rice is getting another chance that he would never have. You know, Kelly Wentworth, PG, for instance. Like, I feel like they are bringing it back. This is not just people who wouldn't be interesting enough, but it's people who got overlooked their first time. And Shane didn't get overlooked, and Jeff Varner didn't get overlooked. It was just not the right place in the right time. I like that this is kind of a convenient excuse to bring all of this collection of players back together. I love that they are all on equal footing. They have all played one time. They all did not win. Yeah, I mean, as equal footing as you can get in a returning player season. Yeah, any other aspects, angles to this season that you want to get into?
One very disappointing aspect is this season is almost certain to be heavily spoiled after... You know, we had 28, which was almost completely unspoiled. 29 was dicey for a fair portion of it, but I think a lot of people managed to emerge from that unscathed. And then this season, again, has been largely unspoiled too. Season 31 is almost a lock to have a boot list out there by the time they get back, which is heavily depressing and something which, you know, I think the fan base is going to have to become accustomed to again, at least for the next few months.
yeah, this crossed my mind the other day, and it terrified me, and so I posted a tweet saying, can we all agree that whoever ends up spoiling this season the day after they get back gets completely run off of Twitter? So please do that. Please make it clear to whoever ends up spoiling this season, Brad Culpepper, that that you should not be doing that.
Well, Brad Culpepper, if he makes it on, which is no guarantee at this point, I don't know who is the most likely candidate to be involved in that. I have some ideas. I will not voice them publicly. But, you know, whoever that is, just please keep yourself in check.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're a former player or you're a candidate and you're listening to this, and even if you're not out, say you're not telling anyone anything, if you think you're being coy when you're tweeting about shit, you are not being coy. People will either see through it or they will not see through it, and those who see through it will do the math. And those who don't see through it wouldn't have seen through it regardless. So don't say anything about your current season for the love of God, and everyone watching will enjoy it that much more. It is not even comparable, the difference between a spoiled season and an unspoiled season. All right, so I think that's going to wrap it up for now for us. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will be back very soon in a couple of days with our pre-finale stuff for season 30, just to get, you know, we have obligatory season 30 content, not that it matters anymore. I cannot wait to get into season 31. Of course, we'll be doing cast previews and so forth once the time comes. And hopefully we'll have some new content as far as The Genius is concerned. I would love nothing more than to be able to get through all of The Genius during this off season. So I think that will be the priority. I will put it out there right now. I am very ready to quit Big Brother. I'm done with Big Brother Canada. I have an itchy trigger finger on Big Brother US. So we will see how that goes. Dom, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will be back very soon. Take care, everybody.